Austerity by Arthur Osborne. At some point, we may wonder what exactly is considered austerity in the light of the teachings of Sri Ramana Maharishi. For a clear understanding of this, we can be grateful to Arthur Osborne, whose clarity of thought, complemented by his own personal experience, has provided us with this short exposition. The introduction to Who Am I? Contains within it the germ of the intellectual explanation of religious austerity. Everyone is involved in the unending search for happiness, so long as the person mistakes the body or individuality for the self. He seeks pleasure from events and contacts, but in the measure that he approaches the true self, he discovers that true happiness, which being his real nature, requires no stimulus to provoke it. If a man renounces the extraneous and fitful happiness given by pleasure for the deep abiding inner happiness, there is no austerity. He is simply exchanging the lesser for the greater, the spurious for the true. More usually, however, a man's pursuit of pleasure or his hankering after it, even if he does not pursue it, is itself what impedes his realization of the self, being due to his false identification with the ego. Therefore, he normally has to renounce the pursuit of pleasure, not after, but before the attainment of eternal, indestructible happiness, not because it has ceased to be pleasure, but because he realizes partly through faith and partly through understanding and provision, that indestructible happiness does exist and is his goal and his true nature, and that it is shut off from him by his mistaken identity and by the indulgence of desires and impulses that this entails. That is to say, that he has to renounce the false attraction before it has ceased to attract. Therefore, the renunciation hurts him and his austerity. Religious austerity may bear fruit without understanding the intellectual basis of it, and there may be many who practice it without this understanding. Nevertheless, this is its basis. To some extent, every spiritual seeker must follow the twofold method of turning his energy away from the pursuit of pleasure and towards the quest of happiness, away from the gratification of the ego and towards the realization of the self. They are two complementary phases of one activity. However, a method may concentrate more on one phase or the other. That taught by Bhagavan concentrated almost entirely on the positive phase, the quest of the self, and he spoke very little of the negative, that is, of austerity or killing the ego. He spoke rather of the inquiry that would reveal that there was no ego to kill and never had been. This does not mean that Bhagavan condoned ego indulgence. He expected a high standard of rectitude and self-control in his devotees, but he did not dictate any actual program of austerity. The basic forms of austerity are celibacy and poverty, further heightened by silence and solitude. Let us see in more detail what was the attitude of Bhagavan in such matters. In speaking of celibacy, one has to remember that the traditional Hindu society with which Bhagavan was familiar has no place for the worldly celibate. Either a man is a householder or a mendicant. When any householder asked Bhagavan whether he could renounce home and property and turn mendicant, he always discouraged it. The obstacles are in the mind and have to be overcome there, he would say. Changing the environment will not help. You will only change the thought I am a householder, for the thought I am a mendicant. What you have to do is to forget both and remember only I am. He similarly deprecated vows of silence and solitude, pointing out that the true silence and solitude are in the heart and independent of outer conditions. Yet Bhagavan showed a benevolent interest in the personal and family affairs of his devotees, their marriages and jobs, the birth and sicknesses and education of the children, all the cares and obligations that family life entails. His injunction was to engage in it like an actor in a play, playing one's part carefully and conscientiously, but with the remembrance that it was not one's real self. Neither did he denounce the small indulgences common to the life of a householder. Indeed, there was a time when he himself chewed betel and drank tea and coffee, the only specific rule of conduct that he advocated and that some might call austerity was vegetarianism. He spoke of the benefit of restricting oneself to sattvic food, that is, to vegetarian food which nourishes without exciting or stimulating. I have also known Bhagavan to say different things to different kinds of people, but they should be taken to suit particular occasions and not as a general rule. The standard set by Bhagavan was uncompromisingly high, but it did not consist in disjointed commands and restrictions. It was a question of seeking the true self and denying the impostor ego, and in doing this, he approved rather of a healthy, normal, balanced life than of extreme austerity. It is true that there was a time when he himself sat day after day in silence, scarcely eating, seldom moving, but that was not austerity. That was immersion in the supreme bliss after the self had been realized, and there was no longer any ego to renounce, that is, when austerity was no longer possible. His abandoning it was not indulgence of the ego, but compassion for the devotees who gathered around. He said that even in the case of a jnani, the ego may seem to rise up again, but that is only an appearance, like the ash of a burnt rope that looks like a rope but is not good for tying anything with. Sourced from the Mountain Path.